Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
This is Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Well, I'm very excited to speak to my next guest. If you have ever bought an Elton John record, if you have ever been to an Elton John concert, or if you have just ever heard an Elton John song, the odds are that you have heard the talents of my next guest, Mr. Davey Johnstone, the musical director. And I guess it's if it has a string, you can play it. Isn't that pretty much it?
Kind of. You know, bagpipes don't have strings, so I leave that to
Oh, you play the bagpipes.
Scottish counterparts. You know, I don't play bagpipes. But, I pretty much play everything that's got a string on it. That's true, yeah.
Well, I tell you, it's a great privilege. In fact, I was talking to Davey before we started. I just saw the band sit down, Davey, the 162nd time.
Oh, my God.
And,
my God, you masochist, you.
And I have to tell you, I keep coming back for more because I still get the goosebumps, and there is some great music and some great musicianship happening on the stage at an Elton John concert, and a great part of that is due to you. I do want to speak specifically because this week, a new Elton John album, the 33rd studio album called Wonderful Crazy Night, will be released, and it's certainly a band album in every respect, and your guitar certainly plays a prominent role on it. But before we talked about the new album, I would like to give you a chance to sort of talk about what you do and your career, because as much as you have been an integral part of Elton's career and certainly a foundation of his sound, you know, he's Elton John, and that's a pretty big shadow.
I think that's what you have to remember, though, that everybody has to consider. It's a very basic thing for me because, I mean, I met Elton way back. In fact, I was playing on his albums before Dee and Nigel were, because I was a studio cat in London at the time. I was a very young 18-year-old studio guy the first time I met him, and he was a very, very shy, just kind of getting noticed songwriter, singer-songwriter in London. And I played on the Madman record, and I played on Bernie Taupin's Poetry album, which was another really fun little project that Gus Dudgeon, the late, great Gus Dudgeon, put together. And Gus and I were very close friends. And Gus was really responsible for getting me involved in this whole thing. He told me that he was producing this guy called Reg, and and that's the last time you'll hear me say that name.
Right.
None of us call him that. And people who do call him that usually get either a tirade of obscene, you know.
Oh, really?
From Elton. Oh, yeah. He hates it, and I don't blame him. It's a bloody awful name. But, you know, this was before he was officially Elton John that I played on his records. So I had no problem with realizing that, you know, the name on the marquee says Elton John. It said that's what it says. You know, I have no problem with that. I am not. I don't ever consider myself to be a front man. I have no problem ripping out guitar solos and co-writing songs and doing the rest of it. But my forte has always been embellishing and helping him with his career. And for me, that's been a very rewarding thing in many ways. I mean, not just financially and gratifying musically, but it's just been a great experience. And we still have a lot of fun. And thankfully, you know, Elton still relies on my input very heavily. Because, you know, when you're a star of that magnitude, there's certain things that you don't like doing. For example, rehearsing, sound checks, different things. And those require quite a, you know, if you're working for a TV show or a radio show or whatever, you know, they've got to hear the whole thing and they want to hear the piano. And if he's not there, then I have to make sure there's somebody there. So I use a guy called Adam Chester, who's a wonderful piano player, singer, songwriter in his own right. But I knew that we needed somebody to actually be there, because otherwise you don't get the full extent, you don't get the full picture of what the Elton John group is without a piano, obviously. It's not a guitar band unless you... you're looking at songs like Saturday Night's Alright for Fighting or Bitches Back, no problem. Then it's very much a guitar band. But, you know, 70% of the time it's very piano-driven, and you have to have a piano and vocal. And Adam Chester, my Sergey Elton, as I call him, is just a brilliant fit in that situation. So I use him for rehearsals, and have done for the past 10 or 12 years, and it's been a great thing.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, so
we can actually play the songs without Elton having to worry too much about sitting through a five-hour rehearsal, six-hour rehearsal, and then he just has to come in and remember his own parts, which is difficult enough for him.
Well, that's the thing. So as the musical director, your duties are very diverse then. So you are rehearsing the band, you are, I would assume, you are creating the arrangements. Many times in concert, the songs will be done pretty close to the original versions, but certainly over the years, you have expanded songs. I mean, right now, I have to tell you, I'm still kind of coming down. What you guys are doing to the song Leave On is amazing these days.
Yeah, we're having fun with it. We're having a lot of fun with it. And that's what tends to happen with the entire catalog. We, you know, in the middle of a tour, somebody will do something that's a little bit different, and suddenly we're off on another tangent, you know. And that's the way that we really have blossomed over the years. And I think that's one of the main reasons that our audience has grown, really. And people around the world know that they're going to see, at least they're going to see a great show. That's why they keep coming back, and we're really grateful to that. We've got a very faithful bunch of fans literally all over the world. I mean, this last tour where we hit everywhere from, you know, this country to London, to Japan, to Korea, to Singapore, Hong Kong, all over Australia, New Zealand. You know, I mean, this is like serious. I mean, you can play all over the planet and have sellout audiences who know all the stuff and want to hear more. It's kind of very gratifying where you go, well, shit, I must have done something good in my career, you know, and it is very rewarding. So I'm very grateful for it. And as I say, I've never been in doubt as to who the star is, and that's never been a problem for me. I'm not the kind of guy that needs to be in the limelight. I'd rather be able to go to the market. I'd rather be able to go to the local sushi bar with my family, and you know, and have people just come up and say nice things rather than, you know, worry about my image as some kind of pop star, because that's not it.
But at the same time, but Elton has also been very generous in that. Especially during the albums, during the heyday there in the 70s, he always would prominently feature each of you on the album covers, you
sure.
know, with a picture and, you know, your name and everything. So it wasn't just that, oh, by the way, there's these hidden guys. He always seems to have been very generous in giving everybody a chance to shine in their own way.
Absolutely. He's amazing that way. And, you know, that's why those records were so personal to everybody and so intimate, because you know, nobody ever told anybody what to play. There was never an issue, and especially Elton, he would never tell me what to play. He would always ask me, what do you think? And in fact, with this new album, I think the reason that it's gone kind of full circle, he called me roughly a year ago when we were doing a couple of gigs in Hawaii, and he called me and said, look, I really want this next... I want the band to play on the next album, which I said, great. I think it should be... The band, to me, has always been an integral part of his music, regardless, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he had to do a couple of... He wanted to do a couple of, like, the album with Leon that he did, The Union, right. And also The Diving Board, were very, to him, things that he had to do. They were very cathartic for him, because he had to do albums without us and on his own and very, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Very kind of personal, intimate songs for him. And that's fine. And I said, hey, go with God, man. Have a great time doing it. And if you need us, you know, we'll be around. Now, we obviously have had to take some of those songs and do the perform them live and put our own stamp on them. And I think he really appreciates that. For example, we still do Hey Ahab regularly in a set. And it's an entirely different version than is on the album. But the nice thing is that when we did this new album, he said, look, I want this to be a really guitar-heavy album. I want you to be, you know, I'm going to write most of the songs in guitar keys. You know, normally he writes things in A-flat, B-flat, E-flat, horrible keys for guitar. But that's kind of helped me over the years become a better musician, I think. But this album, he wanted it to be very guitar heavy, so he wrote them in keys that were really cool for me, which I found really, really sweet for one thing, and just showed how much he respects our friendship and the work we've done over the years, and also it just let me run riot in the studio, and T-Bone was very happy and he loved it. He was rather amazed when he heard our band strike up, you know, the first take of a song that had just been written. You know, he was pretty amazed that this was what it was, because he just he's not used to that.
Because usually T-Bone Burnett, you're talking to about the producer,
right,
who has worked with almost everybody there is these days.
Right.
But he did produce both the Union, the project with Leon Russell, as well as the Diving Board, as you said. And he uses a lot of his own studio musicians.
Absolutely.
So I was very surprised and happy to see that when I heard he was going to produce the new album, to hear that the band was going to be on it, because usually he seems to just be very comfortable within that with his own players. So it's very cool that he was open to working with you guys.
That's very much a producer's stronghold, is their studio, and that's their comfort zone. Are the musicians that they're used to. You know, like, for example, great, great, great players like Jim Keltner and different people that he uses when he's doing his regular stuff, whatever it may be. Now, the fact that Elton asked him to go outside that comfort zone and work with our band was great that he agreed to do it. He was very nervous. He was as nervous as some of the members of the band. I've got to be totally honest with you, Jim. I've known you for many years. You know what I'm like. I was not nervous. I basically got the band together and said, hey, there's one thing that we have to do here, one thing only, which is bring your A game, bring the music to him, and go for it. You know, this is what we do. We're a band. We're not walking in like a bunch of session players and asking people to write a part for us, you know? We're, you know, Alan's guys. He's, you know, I've been with him for 44 years.
Right.
It's like, this is what happens. So, you know, this is what we're doing. And the band responded magnificently. We just went in the studio like we'd do any other project and stepped up to the plate and aced it.
Well, that was
the way we used to do it back in the 70s. You know, we were doing it like, you know, Elton and I would be in the piano room when he'd be writing a song, and we'd suggest a couple of, why don't you try this chord instead of that chord, and what about this bit here? And, you know, we did it the way we used to record it. And then we just immediately do it. And quite frankly, most of the songs were done in second or third takes. There weren't a lot of takes involved in this album. That's why you've got the excitement of the band playing on the record. And then I just, you know, proceeded to run riot on various tracks, adding guitars and 12 strings and solos and different things. And again, I wouldn't spend a lot of time doing it because that's not my thing either. I tend to work very much like Elton. I think that's why we've always got on well. We work very quickly.
Well, that's the one thing that when I had a chance to hear the album a couple of weeks ago when I saw you guys once again in Los Angeles at the Wiltern, where you...
That's right. I saw your smiling face in the front row there, man. I saw you down there.
Yeah, where you premiered about five or six of the songs. And what was so cool about that was I heard the album earlier in the day, you know, the studio version, and then hearing you guys play it live, I have to say, and I'm not just trying to blow some wind up your skirt here, especially there's a big ballad on the album called A Good Heart. and it's in the Elton John tradition. But live, that song was to a different level. And I hope that that stays in the set. I know that Elton doesn't like to play new music too much because he feels the fans came to hear the hits. But that song, A Good Heart, live, to me, was venturing into the classic Elton John song.
Right, exactly.
And while on the...
I have a feeling you've got a good point there. And I have a feeling that's going to stay around because, at least for a while, because he, number one, he loves the song. We all think the song is very cool. Again, it's quite guitar heavy when you listen to the record and the album.
Right.
And the live version is no different. He wanted this kind of attitude. He didn't want it to be like a nice, sweet, you know, piano, quiet album. You know, today's music tends to be one thing or the other. And we are like none of it. I mean, our band, we play what we like to play. And that's why we've got a lot of fans. You know, for example, some of the guys in Pearl Jam and Metallica who come to visit us occasionally, who are just the best people on the planet. And it's like, we're going, Jesus Christ, that's, you know, Eddie Vedder's over there. Like, he's digging the shit out of this. And you're going, well, there's a reason for that. And, you know, you talk to some of those cats afterwards and, the reason that they like our music is that they grew up with it also, like many of our fans did, and they respect it for being really well-crafted and really well-played and sung stuff, you know, from the lead vocal all the way through the band instruments to the backgrounds and to the arrangements that we come up with. This is just what we do, and it's a great feeling to get that kind of feedback either from fans or from your peers, you know. It's a great thing. And, you know, I think we're all very proud of what we've done, and that makes it cool for us to carry on. It's not going to go on forever. We know that. And Alan's already, you know, we've already sat down and talked about roughly how long we might be able to do this thing.
Do you really think he can slow down? His personality.
No, he'll slow down until he falls off his piano bench.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, I keep hearing these, but I mean, knowing how much he obviously loves to perform, he obviously loves to do the music. It as much as I know he certainly wants to spend time with his family and his children now, but I think that performer in him, I don't see how he I'm sure he certainly won't completely walk away, but I just think that after a while he's going to go, okay, let's go again. I can't keep looking at the four walls here.
Well, that's an issue. Obviously, he is like that. He's highly competitive, and he loves performing. It's part of his DNA. But obviously, like you just said, you know, he's got two beautiful little kids who we adore, the whole band does. Hey, man, you know, I've had seven children as well, and I honor my boy that I lost when he was 9 years old, actually in your town of Chicago.
Yeah, believe me, I was there that night, and that was such an incredibly sad occasion, and you're talking about your son Oliver, who passed away in a tragic accident, and it was, ironically, your 50th birthday.
That's right. It was the day after my 50th.
And you were here in Chicago performing during the Billy Joel co-tour. And I'm sure you've never heard the story, and I'll be very brief with it. But I was at that show, and you guys did an amazing – you guys came out first and did an amazing set, really a hot, hot set. And I was like, wow, this is going to be an amazing show tonight. And then Billy Joel came out and did his, and when – The two bands came back together, I noticed that you weren't there. And I saw Bob Birch continually between every song going backstage and coming back. And at that time, both of the bands are on stage.
Right.
And so there's a million people up there at that time. But I noticed that you were gone. And I was right up on the stage, and I was kind of screaming, "Where's Davey? Where's Davey?" And, you know, because it was just strange that you would not be there.
Right.
And no one in the audience...
The worst of times, you know, any unfortunate parent who's been through the loss of a child will know what I'm talking about. It's something that never goes away. You either give up the ghost or you carry on and you honor your kid. And I've been very fortunate to do that. I mean, my wife Kay was with me at the time to celebrate extensively, to celebrate, you know, my 50th birthday. And when that went down, when we got that dreaded phone call during the break,
right?
It was just, you know, obviously it hit us like a sledgehammer. And the first thing Elton did was say, take the plane. You're going back. You have to be with your boy.
Right.
And that's what we did. We just left the venue, went straight to the airport, and got on Elton's jet and zoomed back to California, went straight. And
well, that was the thing. So while that was happening then, Elton, when Elton came out, you could see that he didn't look right. You know, there was something about him, but, you know, the audience had no way of knowing this happened. And so finally, there's a point where he comes up and is signing autographs. And so when he came up to where I was, I looked at him and I shouted to him. I said, "Where's Davey?" And I'll never forget this as long as I live. He bent over, he grabbed my arm, and he went into my ear, and he told me what happened.
Wow.
And we looked at each other for a second in complete shock and in complete sorrow. And you could see how he was totally, affected by this. And then when that was done, he sat down at the piano and he actually announced it then to the audience.
Yeah, he's been, you know, as I can only tell you the way that he is as a person who's known him for so long. I mean, I've been around, as you know, the longest than anybody.
Yeah.
And he has been so supportive in every way to me and Kay and our family in general. And, you know, in fact, Oliver's name is in his chapel alongside, you know, Lady Diana and Gianni Versace and Guy Babylon and Bob. But people we've lost in this wonderful career that we've had, you know, there's going to be a period when things start going bad, especially when you start getting to be our age.
Well, life, but life happens.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, recently it's been a really horrific spate of losing good friends like Bowie and I just lost a dear friend, Jimmy Bain, the other day. And it's just been unbelievable. But as you say, that's life and that's part of the deal. It's part of the road. You either give up or you crawl inside a bottle. In my case, I had to crawl out of the bottle. And I needed a lot of help doing that. And Elton was one of the people who helped me suggest, you know, another way of honoring my son rather than just getting totally brained every night, you know, to try and forget my despair.
What?
But to get back to other things, the main thing is that I've been able to carry on with the help of Elton and the rest of the guys and everybody who's given me so much support and all the fans who've been unbelievable. And, you know, I've learned a lot from it. I've learned an awful lot. And as I say, it's been a real learning curve because you really have to decide what you're going to do, because it's very tempting to say, well, what's the point? What's the point in anything if that kind of situation can happen?
Well, as much as you have played, and as much as tiring as it must be, I hope you are enrolled in some kind of frequent flyer mile program.
I've probably got more miles than God at the moment.
But I tell you
that goes to a lot of my kids. My daughter Juliet, who's 20, she's just went back to New York this morning. She's an art school in New York, and she went back to the snow.
Ah, you're right. Yeah, I hope she can get in. Right.
I think she's okay. But she's already left Chicago. She changed in Chicago this morning, and she should be in New York City very shortly. She'll be calling to let us know. But yeah, I'm a huge family guy, and that's been another thing that's helped me in my quest for the what the hell's going on syndrome. You know, because as I say, a lot of people give up this business because of the fatigue, the travel, the hotels, the time away from your own family, you know, stuff like that. I've tried to balance it as best I can. It's very difficult, but again, it's been very, very, very helpful and very. I don't know. It's been great for the kids to be able to say, well, I've been to Australia or I've been to London, I've been to France. You know, traveling is wonderful for kids. And they've been in a lot of places, and I wish, you know, I know there'll be other trips. I mean, Charlie, my 17-year-old, came with me for a couple of weeks last year on our European tour, and after 2 weeks on the road, he said to me, "Dad, there's no way I could do this. No way." And he's a highly talented piano player. He's a really great piano player.
And he's how old?
17.
And he can't handle it.
Oh, no. No. He just couldn't believe what we do. That's, you know, and
talk about a few of the, I mean, you've actually, not only about the emotional things that you've been talking about, but let's be honest, over the, I mean, you've probably been playing guitar since you were a little kid. This is decades and decades. Physically, you've had some wear and tear.
Sure.
With your shoulder and some other things. I saw you the other night in Vegas, and you were playing Mona Lisa's, and you're playing the mandolin part. And when you weren't playing, I saw you sort of flexing your fingers in between, like, I need some blood flow or arthritis or something. I mean, I would assume that after 40 or 50 years of playing this guitar, as much as you have, physically, the body has to react as well, right?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't like it very much. I don't think it's very natural to do what we do. But at the same time, for me, it's entirely natural because it's what I've always wanted to do. And the same with Elton. The only thing is he's a very fortunate kind of guy because he gets to sit down for the whole thing. You know, I, on the other hand, have to stand up for 2 to 3 hours every night. So, yeah, there's been a lot of wear and tear. Again, you have to work out how you're going to deal with that. And, you know, it's a compromise. It tends to be a compromise. And there's no getting away from the fact that when you love doing something, it's something else that inspires you to keep doing it. Because the pitfalls are many, and the disappointments are many, and also the work is just plain hard. I mean, I don't know too many bands of our age around there, apart from, you know, the Stones,
right,
who are older than us, a lot older than us, and they don't work anywhere near as hard as we do. They do, you know, they do about a dozen gigs every few years, you know, and God bless them for doing it. And Mick is in great shape because he works at it really hard, and he's a great businessman. But as far as just the actual work side, we there's nobody to touch us as far as how many gigs we actually do.
Well, and the thing is, too, as much as you travel, and as much as I'm sure there are some days when, as exciting as it is to be in a rock band, as exciting it is to come out to play in front of 15 or 20,000 people and hear the roar, I'm sure there's some days where it does feel like a job. But I must say that, to your credit and everybody in the bands, that if that is the case, you certainly give the people their money's worth. There's no sense that you guys are going through the motions. I mean, part of your onstage persona is, of course, those still, I got to hand it to you, those still, those golden locks are still flowing.
I don't know how they managed to hang in. Unbelievable.
They're still flowing.
I got really lucky there. Yeah. I think I got my mother's side of the family genes. She had this amazing long mane of blonde hair. Right up until she died, it got quite white. Obviously, every time she was 83,
But my point is, your smile, you're always smiling. As I said the other night, you guys were playing Levon, and it goes into an extended jam at the end. That's really amazing. Nigel's drumming toward the end is out of nowhere, and now you've got this kind of searing guitar solo in addition to Elton's vamping. And I'll tell you, that song, when that thing is done, that song alone you could just leave after. And then,
I know. I would be quite happy to occasionally leave the stage a little earlier. That's one of Elton's things. He is not comfortable playing a short set. He just can't do it. You know, when most bands would go, "Oh, great, we only have to play an hour," he can go, his reaction will be, "Oh, I can't do that. I've got to play at least, you know, hour 45, 2 hours, 2.5 hours," which is insane, but it's what we do, you know. And, you know, you have to have a tremendous amount of stamina to do it. And, you know, it's keeping us doing it. And you know what? There's still a certain amount of cool involved. A lot of people go like, "This is amazing. You guys sound as good as you did back in the 70s. And that's always nice to hear. Or somebody will say, oh, you know, I grew up with your music, which I love, you know, which is really sweet, you know, to hear that, you know, your music got me through college or whatever, you know. And
what I find interesting, because it's part of your job, too, as you said, not only rehearsing the band, doing the arrangements, finding the musicians as you've had to when changes had to be made. But, you know, you're always, and people like me, the diehard fans, are always clamoring for songs to enter the set list. That's always got to be a push and pull. And one thing that I find so interesting about the depth of Elton's catalog, and when I look now, I think about the history. As you said, this can't go on forever. I think about the history. I think about the legacy. And what's amazing is I hope that as the next couple of years go on, that you can dig deeper into that catalog, because there is such a deep catalog. There's so many great album tracks, and most people know the Elton John hits. And I understand they're paying a lot of money and they're coming to hear those, but it would be a shame that so many of these, you know, let's face it, back in the 70s, you easily could have released 4 to 5 singles on each album.
Yeah, but you know what we did in those days? I think we were copying the Beatles' modus operandi, which was basically our singles were separate. Now, I know that over here in the States, you guys got different versions of Beatle albums, for example.
Right, yeah.
But in Britain, they always were separate from the albums. You know, like Paperback Writer would come out, say, and then it wouldn't be on an album.
Right.
But in the States, it's always been a different animal. You know, Hey Jude was a single that wasn't on any albums over there.
Yeah, Penny Lane was never on an album.
Hits were never on albums. Over here, so different mindset. We just naturally said, well, let's write a single. So we do Philadelphia Freedom, which would be on an album. It would record it separate from Captain Fantastic, the whole album, but we did it at the same time as those sessions, but it would come out as a separate single. So I guess people don't really realize just the amount of output and the amount of stuff that we did in those.
Well, think about this.
Especially those years in the 70s, from 72 to like 77.
Yeah, well, think about this. There are songs that you do not play and haven't played for many, many years that other bands or other acts would have to play as an encore.
Right.
For instance, and some of these are number one songs, like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds was a number one song. Island Girl was number one for 3 weeks. I Don't Want to Go On With You Like That was a number two song. Little Genie was a number three song. I mean, you know, Nikita, Sacrifice, you know, even a song that wasn't necessarily, you know, from the vintage time, but even a song like Mama Can't Buy You Love was number 10. These are songs that anybody else would have to play because everybody would be expecting them to play them. And Elton hasn't played them in years.
We don't play them.
But I mean, you know.
No, you know, I thanks for pointing that out to me. But the funny thing is that it's probably the most asked question I get, whether it's talking to fans and people who are aware of what we've done over the years. Why don't you do, like,
right,
I've Seen the Saucers. Why don't you play Pinky? Why don't you play, you know, Ticking? And I'm going, well, you know, we've got so many effing songs that it's really impossible. I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, Elton and I have talked about it, about possibly, you know, in the last few years of our career, which is basically we're embarking on right now, at some point to do like a deep cuts type concert.
That would be amazing.
Know, where we play somewhere for like 3 or 4 dates and stay
right
in the same town. We're doing multiples in one town.
Steely
and
Dan did that.
The idea would be to stick a few different songs in there that people would not expect. See, that's the problem. It's okay that the fans who are familiar with all of our work, it's all very well them saying, well, why don't you play this and why don't you, and yeah, we wish you would play that. The problem we've got is that the other 19,000 people who bought a ticket,
right,
they want to hear the shit that they bought, you
right
know, that they really know us for. So it's a very difficult thing. You cannot really stick in an entire set of all these deep cuts, as much as we know that probably our most loyal fans would love to hear those things.
But my point is, the ones that I just named, they're not even deep cuts.
I know.
Those are top 10. Those are number one songs.
Have, you know, that's
yeah,
that's the insane part.
Yeah.
Is that it's a massive, catalog. I mean, big hits or not, that doesn't tend to enter into it. I mean, what really tends to be the template of whether we'll do a song or not is whether Elton likes to do it or not. And very much that'll be the case with the new record as well. What I do normally is I play every song. I rehearse every song with the band and my buddy Adam Chester being Elton, playing it at being Elton, so that we know every song live. And then we rehearse with Elton and he goes, well, I like doing that, but this one's, I don't feel comfortable singing this one and playing it, or, you know, this kind of thing.
Right.
So we do go through the motions of doing the whole album, and then we have to gauge which songs we like playing and which songs go down best. You know, that's what you have to consider as well, because the audience might just stand there going, what the fuck was that? I mean, excuse my language. They might say, what was that song? You know, why did they do that when they could have done, you know, something else? They know. And it's an ongoing problem that we'll always, always have.
Well, I think the
only way we're going to in any way appease some of our greatest, most loyal fans is what I just said, by doing the occasional Deep Cuts concert and pay tribute to our fans in that way. We've talked about it. It may happen down the road. I hope it does, because it's a lot of fun playing those songs. I mean, we've done a couple of shows where we've done things like Dixie Lily, and
I thought the audience
go nuts. You know,
the best shows that you've done over the last several years was the 60th anniversary or the 60th birthday party, where you did play quite a few deep cuts, with some that even blew me away, like Skyline Pit or High Flying Bird and Ballad of a Well-Known Gun. It was like, wow, you really were digging deep into that. That was one of the best setlist concerts I think you've done in 20 or 30 years from an older fan's perspective.
Right. That's the deal. I think a lot of people were fortunate enough to have put out a fairly solid body of work over the years that people can almost pick something from just about every album, you know, I mean that literally. I mean, there's almost every album, but there's one or two songs. I mean, I know that people always give a bashing to Leather Jackets, and you know that was his down period, if you like, and he was in a bit of a state at that point. That was probably, you know, his worst period personally, as far as what was going on in his life, in his personal life.
Right.
But you know, I still think there are a couple of killer tracks on that record, and you know, my job is to suggest to him, you know what would be a good track to try? Why don't we play this? We've never tried that. You know, for example, a couple of years ago, I said, you know what, let's do I've Seen That Movie Too, because we've never played it.
And that was an amazing addition. That's such a great song.
And we played it, and he went, oh, my God, that sounds really great. Now, the audience did respond to the three or four times that we played it live, but after like the fourth or fifth time, he went, you know what? The audience aren't getting this. I'm not getting the love that I want from it. And let's face it, that's why he's out there. He wants to get he doesn't want to see people going to the bathroom or going out to get another beer if it's a song they don't know.
Right.
And that tends to happen. So, you know, to all you wonderful fans of Elton John music over the years, to whom I am deeply indebted, you know, believe me, I do my best to get as many of the little known tracks as I can into the set, and we give them a shot here and there. But there are just so many that it would literally take me, you know, from now until, you know, the next couple of years, if we decided to play all those songs, you know, it'd be insane, because everybody's got their favorites. That's the catch, you know.
So, what are your favorites from the new album?
You know what? When you've got a new album, you tend to like that better than anything else, because you want to play the new stuff. So at the moment, I've got probably quite a few favorites. I love Looking Up. I love Wonderful Crazy Night itself, because Elton and I were laughing uproariously at the end of that take. It was like the first or second take of doing that song, and at the end of it, we were both screaming with laughter, and the rest of the band were saying, well, what's so funny? And I was like, well, didn't you hear that? No, it's hilarious. That's the, one of the best things I've ever heard. You know, and you know, it's funny. But when you get that kind of enjoyment out of playing music, then it's cool. Then you're doing the right thing.
Well, you've got to like guilty pleasures because, my gosh, your guitar just jumps out on that song.
Oh yeah, we had a blast doing Guilty Pleasure. I love that one too. Also, I love England and America, which didn't go on the album, which will be a bonus track. But that's a serious guitar track,
was that one of the loudest songs you've ever recorded with him?
Could be.
Because wow, I mean that thing just it starts loud and it ends louder.
Yeah, but you know the thing is, a lot of people forget the fact that because Elton's very well known for his ballads, probably more than anything else, that people get a bit of a shock when they come and see us live. How hard we actually rock. I think that's still an issue where people are kind of, wow.
Yeah.
You know, we had no idea you guys were like this. You know, we were expecting a nice, like, yeah. You know,
Tony Bennett
nice
concert.
Quiet little evening of ballads and stuff. It's like, no, we don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, we can do that, but that's not it. You know, I mean, my ambition for Elton's more interesting or introspective music, shall we say, would be to do it in a small, say like a studio situation where we've got phones and we've got our setup and something like, you know, only like a couple hundred people can get it and do like a week of that. That would be, to me, a really cool thing to do one day. And hopefully we'll get around to doing that. Right now, there's just more and more shows because people want to see us in different corners of the planet. I mean, after Vegas finishes on Sunday night, Monday morning I'm on a plane to London, and we do a bunch of shows there, a couple of live radio shows, and then we go to Paris to do three live radio shows there. So that's what it is. That's what our thing is. And you either keep up with it and you do it and you enjoy it, or you don't, and you become somebody who used to be a rock and roll guy, you know. No, you're something else.
Right. Well, though the one thing, and I appreciate your time, and I won't keep you any longer, but I did want to say one thing. You've got to talk to your boss and use his clout, because if the E Street Band can be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I don't see why the Elton John Band should not be inducted, considering the depth of the catalog. The success of this catalog, I mean, my God, 7 number one albums in the 70s alone. I mean, and here you are, as you just said, 40 years later, still playing. I mean, obviously it's not the same core band, but I mean, there still is you and Nigel at this point, and even Ray Cooper for many of the shows. It seems to me that there's something called the Elton John sound. You, in particular, have been a foundation in defining that, and I think that band, both in its heyday record-wise and now 30 or 40 years later still as a unit, certainly deserves its place in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well, that's so nice of you to say that, Jim. It's something that comes up occasionally and people mention it. You know, those kind of awards would be nice. I mean, that would be great. It would be almost like there's a real validation coming from somewhere else. But, you know, if they get around to it, they'll get around to it. I mean, it's not something that I'm going to cry about that you know, Milli Vanilli will get inducted but not the Elton John Band or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not really something that I need to have in my life right now. But it's nice of you, very nice of you to say so. And I think as far as, you know, when you consider the body of work we've done over the years, there's no question that we would be deserving of that honor, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it right now. What I am going to ask you to do, though, is put out some prayers, you and your listeners, to our dear friend Ray Cooper, who has had a triple bypass, and he's in hospital in Germany, and we're all just praying for him on a daily basis to get well and get back to us again, because he has been such a big part of my life. And in fact, I knew Ray before I knew Elton. Ray
oh,
and
really?
I did sessions for all different people.
Well, it seems like Ray Cooper knows everybody, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ray's been playing. I mean, the stuff that Ray's played on, stuff like, you know, Horse With No Name by America and some of the Harry Nilsson stuff and George Harrison stuff. I mean, it's like ridiculous what he's done.
Well, I remember in the 90s all of a sudden popping up, and there he was with Eric Clapton when they did that,
sure,
that slowed down version of Layla, and there's Ray.
Oh, absolutely. No, Ray's played with everybody. More importantly, he's an absolute dear, dear friend of mine. And just to let you know how he got into the band, it's quite comical, actually, because one day Elton said to me, in the end of 1972, and it was obvious that our band was happening. You know, we'd had our first number one, you know, Rocket Man and then Hockey Chateau and then Crocodile Rock, and we were rolling. You know, it was all going on. He said, you know, I think we need a keyboard player, somebody to add that thing. And I said, well, let's get Ray Cooper. He plays piano. And Alan was, really? I thought he was just a percussionist. I'm saying, no, Ray is never just a percussionist. He does a lot of shit that will terrify you. And he said, okay, we'll give him a shot. And I told Ray, and he was like, are you sure? And I'm going, yeah, come on. So he came into the band, and midway through the first concert he played, Elton was turning around, wondering what all the noise was about, you know, and what he was doing. He was witnessing the Ray Cooper show.
Right,
know?
Exactly.
And Ray is just not only a primo percussionist, but he is a wonderful human being, and I want to wish him all love and all our best wishes for a quick recovery.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he definitely adds a showmanship. And as I've always said, he could make hitting a tambourine like you're climbing Mount Everest.
Exactly. He makes it look like, you know, nobody's ever played a tambourine like
exactly.
that. I mean, yeah, he's a gas. And as I say, more importantly to me, we're dear friends. And I want to see my friend back up there again and at least walking around well and healthy, you know?
Yeah, well, I want to thank Davy Johnstone, the musical director and guitarist, musician extraordinaire of the Elton John Band. We're talking about the Elton John new album that's going to be coming out this week on February 5th called Wonderful Crazy Night. And as I said, if you like Elton John, I know, you know, it's a lot of times the older groups, people don't run out to buy the albums as they used to. But if you really want to hear Elton John having a fun time, with a top notch band, as I said, this is really one of the most collaborative albums I think you guys have ever done. I mean, as you talked about bringing an A game, everybody on, not only does the band sound like a very cohesive unit on its own throughout this album, but then everybody has a moment to shine. And
that's
they
true,
and
yeah.
they really step up and bring, and as you said, bring their A game. And this album will definitely jump out at you and catch you by surprise. And I think that's, for someone of Elton's age already, making 33 albums, that I think that says quite a lot.
33, is that all it is?
I heard an interview today with Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, and he was bragging that they made 19.
I know. Well, I mean, Pearl, you know, one of my other friends is Randy Newman, and I remember a few years ago we were doing something together, and he said, you know, how pathetic is this? I've made 12 albums. How many of you, you know, he said, you guys have made like 28. And this was like, you know, this was about 8 or 9 years ago. But, yeah, we've made a lot of records because, you know, that's what we do, and we don't plan it as far as, you know, okay, we're going to make this album, and then we're going to make another. It's like this, they just happen. Elton never looks at a lyric until he gets in the studio. And then he puts Elton, you know, Bernie Taupin's lyrics on the piano bench, and off we go. We just start writing, and lo and behold, it all just becomes that kind of a process.
Could I just ask you, I need to ask you one quick question, because to that point, which reminded me of something. So, you know, what's actually, you know, even though Elton and Bernie have been this now 49 years, this partnership, throughout the years, you have got shared credits on a few songs, most notably a major hit. I guess that's why they call it the blues.
You have
a writing credit on that. So here's my question to that point about you saying that, you know, Bernie brings the batch of lyrics in, Elton sits down, and off to the races. So you were talking about the way Elton writes for a guitar as opposed to writing for a piano. So my question is, for a song that's very, you know, heavily guitar-based, like A Bitch's Back or like A Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, is that riff, which is so prominent, which basically defines the song, each of those songs, is that something that Elton Wright, that riff that, you know, da na 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 na, or you know, the bitch is back, da na 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 na, is that you? Or did he write that on the piano?
No, that's me. Because, I mean, Elton will be the first one to admit that he's not. I mean, I've tried many times to teach him to play an E chord on guitar, and it is one of the funnier things on the planet. He just, for such a brilliant musician, great piano player, he doesn't know one end of the guitar from another. He loves guitar, and occasionally when he's written something, see, that's why it's so easy for me to come up with riffs or ideas, because the substance of the thing is there. But for example, Saturday Night, there's no piano on the live track. It's just me and Dee and Nigel, and I overdubbed several guitars, and then we persuaded him to put some piano on the choruses.
Right.
But no, that's me, and to be brutally honest about it, I don't think about those in terms of, oh my God, I should get a share of this song because I wrote this and wrote that. That's never what it's been about. For me, it's always, I think that's probably the number one reason why a lot of bands break up. It's business as against the love of playing music. You know, I do it for the love of it. I do it to make everything as good as they can. As I said earlier, my job is to embellish and to hopefully help him to make the right choices and when he's writing, and just give him a hand when necessary, and then rock the shit out of them, you know. And that's what I do.
So then, for instance, then when you did get a writing credit on, I guess that's why they call it the blues, what was the difference in the writing process that on that song you did get a writing credit, but on a song like Saturday Night's Right for Fighting you wouldn't?
The difference was in that when he read the lyric to, well, there's been about, I don't know, 12 or 20 songs that we've written together, including Grow Some Funk of Your Own, those kind of things. That usually will happen, well, will always happen, when he says, you know what, I know this song, looking at the lyric, I know it needs to be a guitar song. So I'll just sit there with my guitar, he'll sit there with the lyric, and we'll write it. So the same thing happened with Cage the Songbird from Blue Moves. Mm-hmm. A lot of the fans love that song, and that came about me playing that melody on the guitar, and he's going like, "What is that? I love that." And I said, "Just something I'm writing right now." And he said, "Hold on a minute, I think I have a lyric." And he went through Bernie's lyrics, the sheaf that he had. He said, "Play that again." And I played it once, and he sang it, and it was done.
Wow.
That was so really, it's when he wants to write something that is totally guitar based. Saturday Night was more like he'd written the rock and roll song. He'd written the body of it, and I came up with the intro and the idea for the solo. As in Bitches Back, same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's another reason why we've survived a long time, because it hasn't really been about the money, you know. I mean, it's great to get the financial rewards and reap all that and to be credited with songs over the years. It's wonderful. But it's not the be-all and end-all. I think if a band gets into a squabbling situation, it's curtains. I don't mean the song. I mean, it's like literally right. Curtains. They're over, you know, because that's not what it's about. It's about making something as great as it can be for the whole, you know, for the whole thing.
Well, I want to thank Davey Johnstone, who obviously has a passion for music and has been following that passion and that talent for 50 years. If not more. And if, as I said before at the outset here, if you've ever listened to an Elton John record or if you've ever been to an Elton John concert, you have enjoyed the talents of this man. And we'll be continuing, hopefully, for the next several years as well, even though Father Time continues to roll on. You guys seem to be defying that, and that makes it great because, as I said, there's an amazing amount of music there. And hopefully a legacy that Elton John's music will be played in the next 100 and 200 and 300 years, too, just like Mozart or anyone else, because it is that important, I believe, of a musical catalog. And you have certainly been an important aspect of that. And as I said, coming out to see you guys as much as I do, if I wasn't having a good time, hey, you know, you talk about going to all the airports or the hotels. Hey, so do I.
There you go.
Hey, there you go. With Vegas.
Yeah, no, that's what we always notice. We always notice when people who like what we do tend to show up in the most bizarre places, and you go like, what the hell are you doing here? You know, it's like, well, we had a couple of weeks and we thought we'd visit you in Australia. It's like, wow, you know, that's insane. To us, it's only insane because, you know, I wouldn't do that, I don't think.
Well, just so you know, when I see you guys play in Vegas, I leave on, I'll see you on a Saturday night. I leave Saturday morning. I get to Vegas at 3 or 4, I see your show at 7:30, and I leave at the 6 o'clock plane the next morning.
Oh, there you go, man. This is what we call dedication.
Well, once again,
thanks,
it's...
Jim. Well, thanks a lot.
It's always fun.
We'll see you next time. You know, we're either in Chicago or you're in Vegas. Or
oh,
wherever.
I will see you definitely somewhere down the road very soon.
All right, man. You take care of yourself.
All right, thank you. And thanks for a great album.
Oh, thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.